Welcome, my friends, to the podcast that never ends, where we gather our clan and talk about peace and love in our lives, the difficulties along the journey, and how we rise up. We will experience a little thing I call Kluberty together, find our sweet spot, and planting our seeds to watch them grow in our magic garden. I'm Uncle Dave, and our transformation starts right here. Hey now, and how are you doing? Want to welcome you to another episode of Peace, Love, and Bring a Bat. Today's guest is Marisa Zalabak, who I had met personally. We had known each other for a little while through a lot of communities, but I met her doing her TEDx talk. She's an amazing person. She's an educational psychologist, author, TEDx speaker, researcher, the founder of the Open Channel Culture, and the creator of the Human Arts Lab. Marisa, welcome. Thank you so much for coming on board.
Thank you for having me, David. I'm thrilled to be here. So what are we going to talk about today?
Well, we're going to talk about a whole bunch of stuff. I love all the stuff that you do. I had looked at all the stories that you had done, and what I'd love to do is just even talk about the TEDx experience, because that's where, you know, we physically met. We were lucky enough, and that alone for me was an experience.
Yeah, it was a fantastic experience for me, and it was really, it's not my first speaking experience, but it as you know, moving into the arena, the TED arena, it's a deeper dive. It's a much deeper dive. And there's a kind of honing and practice that is very particular to creating a TED talk. And I was thrilled, and I didn't, you know, as we knew, we didn't know whether or not it was going to happen. And thank God for George Andriopoulos, who ended up, you know, pulling it off virtually. And that, of course, was part of the other challenge. There was that we were doing it virtually, and yet he pulled off the feeling that you were in a live event. And yet we were there without really an audience, and yet it felt to the viewers as if there was an audience, and that was also had its challenges. But I really loved the experience. I loved the experience of writing it, of really cutting it down, of really focusing on making something so much finer.
It's definitely a craft. Learning how to do that. Writing is easy to, for some people to get it all out, but how do you craft it into a speech? And then for me, the challenge was, my talk was, the memorization was really difficult for me. I had it, and because it was so personal, I couldn't, I could do this speech probably today much better than I did for that performance. But your speech was excellent. What I loved, even just the title, the Educational Fire Drills for Flourishing. You've been flourishing your whole life. So I'd love to hear about.
Certainly working at it. And I was also very lucky because, I also had the extraordinary guidance of brilliant Tricia Brooke, who is teaches the mastery of TEDx, as well as George. And George Andriopoulos. Between the two of them, having that kind of guidance was extraordinary. And the memorization is definitely key. And that was not new to me, because I had known that from being a performing artist. I'd been a performing artist, but I had not done that in a long time, of memorizing something that long. And of course, it makes all the difference in the world to feel comfortable enough to then be able to bring your full self. And the subject of flourishing is close to my heart, because I think finding the ways to get beyond just survival,
sure,
right? Life. The first one is survive, right? Get through. And then once we get through, how do we go beyond that to thriving, to really having meaning in our lives? And as I get older, I, you know, that that becomes more and more essential for me.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. Through my process of the writing and the things that led me up to the process, I created something called Cluberty. And it's that life, you know, understanding the clues of life and how you can put them all together. But I love the thriving and the flourishing because it's all that flow. I mean, even with your Tricia talk for the Big Talk Academy, which I, again, will completely agree with you that between George and Tricia, you can really craft your skills. I mean, they're amazing people. They're amazing people. Just, we could stop right there. But their skills and their skill set, how they're able to get stories out of people, are truly just, you know, a really a craft, which is beautiful. But to go back to your flourishing, I mean, I know you have work a lot as a psychologist, so you're actually always helping people flourish. And, you know, your mental health and emotional health is also really so important to you.
Well, it's tied together with several, you know, I mean, I don't think there's anything in most of our lives that are not connected, right? I think that they're all, the title of my company, Open Channel Culture, describes two theories. One is something called open channel flow, which is a hydraulic theory dynamic, which has to do with measuring the power of fluid that goes through a channel. And even rivers, the ocean is a channel, right? So using the power of the flow of the fluid. And the second is the Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi's theory of flow, which is to be in an activity, to experience something in such a state of immersion that we lose state, lose sense of time. It's pure joy to be in that state of immersion. And so I think that, you know, many of the aspects of my life have come together in a flow to all toward those goals. And they also then branch off into different places. So I use the work that I do in schools. I use the work that I do supporting mental health professionals. And some of that is training for social emotional learning and what, you know, what people mean by emotional intelligence.
Sure.
And a lot of it is actually based on the what I have learned over the past 4 or 5 decades. I'm older than 4 or 5 decades, but over the past 4 decades about life from creative arts and what we know as human beings, how we can be better human beings by embracing what is to be learned through the creative arts. And those really are, it's an area of education that is sorely, sorely dismissed too easily, and is really a huge focus of my work for the future, because I'm quite interested in futurism at the moment. As you know, I kind of just stepped into the world of AI in the last year and a half. I'm a co-author on what is the newly launched ethical standard recommendations for the design of AI. Crazy, right? For engineers. I'm not a tech person.
But yeah, what? it's all great. You know, because that was your talk with Tricia at the Big Talk Academy, the virtual showcase about the AI, the unique role of humanity in AI. And I loved, you know, that talk as well. And I really love that you integrate everything, all the senses in all of your talks, because that's where we're one of the places we're feeling short as a society in education is we're still teaching in the 1950s, can you build a widget mentality, and the creativity is, you know, still out there because we're human beings. You know, those who are creative are just exploding with all the different types of technology, but you know, you embrace the five senses.
And well, there's also you know, social emotional learning in schools is talked about quite a bit, in the same way that in the business world, people talk about EQ, right? People talk about emotional intelligence all the time. But in the business world, it's still referred to as soft skills.
Right.
And in the schools, it everybody puts it on their checklist of things that, yes, we do that here, but it's not really, it's not a priority.
Right.
It's not one of the essentials. And so to me, I feel that we've gotten things backwards a little bit. And I also think of education definitely not just for the young.
Right. You have to keep learning. I mean, that's the thing is, you know, growth needs to be done. You know, I'm experiencing some caregiver challenges for people who did not choose to do that, you know, and you either grow or things start shifting in a less good way. And I love the growth and the reemergence of everything that you talk about. I'm not, you know, preparing for this. I was looking at everything. I was like, wow, this is exactly what I wanted to talk about the AI and how one of the things you wrote, you know, how we have a role. It's not only the Hollywood version of AI of all the bad things. AI is really good in a lot of ways.
Well, that was how I got involved in it to begin with. I got invited because of the work I do, not only with social emotional work, but the work that I do with racial equity. And so I was invited because of the aspect of social good that is being done by AI. And there's all kinds of things. There's apps that address human trafficking. There are apps that are dealing with medical issues. There are so many ways that we use artificial intelligence that we don't think that that's artificial intelligence, but we all care, right? Our phones,
right?
We're using artificial intelligence every day. And I had an image of it almost like a Marvel comic. You know, I had an image of it like a Dr. No, do you know? and was kind of frightened by it. And then when I got invited to this meeting at Google headquarters, and I ended up being seated at a table with one of the heads of one of the largest engineering regulation organizations in the world, and had a conversation. And that's how I ended up on the committee for creating the ethics for the design of AI related to human well-being. So, and it was just because I asked some very interesting questions.
I think that's part of it is if you're going to show up, right? It's that showing up piece. It's that authenticity of learning, knowing that you don't know it all, and how can I learn what I want to do? And you took that opportunity being at Google at this meeting to say, okay, if I found somebody who would know more than I do, great. I need to learn from them.
And then asking questions, right? Because the thing is, you know, beautiful. I love the phrase beautiful questions, right? If we can really ask beautiful questions open up all kinds of exploration. I love best when somebody says, well, I don't know. We don't know the answer to that. You know, I mean, that's kind of exciting, right? What if? It brings the what if. And I'm a big fan of what if.
That's awesome. Yeah, because the what if is that's where you start expanding this. You and I can sit together and say what if, but we might have two different what ifs. And then how do we explore that? So what happens when you come up with a what if, even just for yourself?
I'm kind of an information junkie. So, and a learning junkie, I really do like, you know, I can go down rabbit holes. So I will go research everything that I can. I'll read everything. If something begins to interest me and I don't know the answer, or I think of something that could be possible, I'm probably going to research everything that I can get my hands on. After that, I kind of begin to I use fantasy. I use imagination. I begin to write about it. When I was more involved on a daily basis in the arts, I would have used it for either visual arts or performing. right? It's so it's that we, I think that we can use those what ifs to move us in new directions. And very honestly, those have moved me into very many different directions because I've been in so many different careers at this point. And people go, how did you get there? And part of it is, well, I don't know. What if I could do that in a sense? What if I could do that? And the answer always to from me has always been, sure, I can do that. And then I yeah, well, how to do it afterwards.
Yep. That's exactly, so many people, how'd you get that done? I'm like, I don't know, but I did it. And you just figure it out.
Yes.
That's the answer is, okay, if somebody thinks I could do it, that means I could do it and I'll figure it out.
Yes.
And if not.
That is my favorite phrase, I think, of all time. My daughter knows that is to be on my epitaph. Is she's figuring it out.
Yeah. That's gonna be awesome. That's a great motto, just because you always figure it out, and it sounds like you've figured out a lot of things. Now, one of the things that I know you are passionate about is the Human Arts Lab. So could you figure that out or explain it to me so maybe I could figure it out with you?
Well, I am in the process of figuring that out. Thank you very much. And it is something I've been working on for many, many years. And it was something that I had intended on doing when I didn't have to work anymore. And the truth is that I'm never going to not work. I love to work, right? It's just I want to be working at things I really feel excited about. And I do really enjoy the work that I do. And simultaneously, I'm very drawn to this work in particular. And Human Arts Lab, what I mean by that is what I was referring to before, is it's a new form of education. It's a new focus and programming, a different kind of programming on education that's actually global. And it's a combination of combined transdisciplinary creative arts with human psychological and mental health arts. And it combines those things. It uses people from multidisciplines, transdisciplines, right? Because you have unidiscipline, multidiscipline, then we get into transdiscipline, which is really when you're going completely away from, these are not people who are used to hearing each other because they don't think the same way, right? And how do we bring those together to begin to create something very new? And to work, to do that, I have a very specific kind of formula for that. To work with groups of young people, and that will eventually become networks of education. It's almost like a web or a garden, right? That happens around the world that gets connected. And that learning from the children will go simultaneously into the adult community, because I believe very much in intergenerational learning. I also believe that most of the world has it really screwed up about the thought that we stop learning, right? We go to school and then we stop learning. And I think that learning should be something that one does from the second one is born until the second one leaves the planet. And I think our orientation to learning has been the problem.
Sure. I
don't know if I answer your question. It's information. The Human Arts Lab.
No, that was perfect. I really enjoy that answer, because that's what it is. It's a formation, and it is tied into lots of things. It's not just one thing, and that's the beauty of it. Even when you talk about it, and I know you've talked about non-conflict resolution and planting the seeds. So one of the things we do talk about on the podcast is planting seeds. So, not only that you've already done that, and that was talking about planting it. It's not just planting a seed and waiting for a tree to grow. You have to nurture it and continue to nurture it. It's not just, okay, you go to school and now at 12th grade, you graduate high school or you go to college and then you're done. You need to keep expanding. And if you want to excel in your profession, you need to keep learning the new things.
And I love your images of that, your analogies and image of that, because it's not, it's planting the seed, it's harvesting, it's understanding how things grow, and then, you know, and things pass, right? Things die and they regenerate. Mm-hmm. And we, you know, so, you know, and the future, my fascination with the future, not only with AI, but with culture, with the environment, with businesses, you know, there's a new term of regenerative businesses and regenerative and B Corps. And so I'm quite involved with those as well. And, you know, this idea of regeneration is what we have to begin to be focused on versus I'm going to do something, that's the result, and it's done, right? Is this, I love your, you know, planting seeds and going through the whole, all the processes.
Yep. It's the magic garden, right? You never know what's going to grow. That's the beauty. I mean, think about even 5 years ago, all the things that you've done in the past 5 years, some of them that you would have never thought of doing. I mean, here, for me, this podcast would have never been on my radar. You know, it was like, oh, okay, somebody else could do that. And eventually, through lots of circumstances, I was like, let's go do it. And, you know, even that has been an experience, walking into that new environment, that new garden, to learn about that, the speaking career, right, that we both are emerging in. And it's all these things that it just keeps constantly growing and growing and growing. It's beautiful.
Yes, it is. And it's, I think part of the challenge, one of the challenges, is also accepting that there's going to be, as you know, going to be really tough moments. Sure. Well, right? The caterpillar has to die before the butterfly comes out, right? Is that the, you know, when the seed is, a seed has to break the shell open in order to sprout. And so there, the part of the cycles are also not just, you know, blooming.
Right. The flower doesn't wake up one morning. It's an ugly process. I mean, that's how when I work with my coaching career, I go, yeah, you're a caterpillar right now. And that whole process is an ugly process to become a butterfly. And the magic is the butterfly doesn't know how beautiful it is. It doesn't care because it just flies, and that's what makes it happy, you know. Because I know you're very passionate, yeah, about creating a culture that becomes like the core of your strategies. So, what's some of the?
Well, I mean, a huge part of my business is in, you know, helping people not only plan but implement practices, real practices, habits, and practices that create a culture. Culture can just come up on itself, and it does. But eventually cultures can end up really becoming toxic. And it requires a consciousness, a certain amount of consciousness to the culture, and what an intentionality. What do I want my culture, the culture of my organization, the culture of my family, the culture of my community? What do I want my culture to be? Because I don't have to just make do. I can, and that's helpful, right? Knowing how to make do is fantastic. But then going beyond making do and being able to say, what else, what if, right? What else can I do that, how could this cult, the culture that we are living in, right? That's the water we swim in. How could it be different? And that takes real intention, conscious intention.
Well, it's part of that trusting the process. You know, at the beginning, when you're trying to change a culture or be part of a change, there's a lot of resistance.
Yeah.
How do you deal with resistance? You know, how do you manage resistance?
I've gotten better at dealing with resistance with other people, because I've had to deal with my own. I've had to learn to go, oh, you're having a big reaction to that, to myself. Yeah. Oh my God, you know, you're having a big reaction to that. What are you resisting? What's coming up? And knowing that when other people have resistance, it's very often that there's fear, right? Because resistance is so much about fear and anger. Even when people have an angry reaction, anger comes out of unmet needs psychologically. And so when we don't get our needs met, whether it's safety, security, love, belonging, respect, whatever that is, right? There's only five basic needs. And if we don't have those met, we can get to anger. And that's, you know, a lot of times that's how resistance shows up. It's easier to be angry than to actually feel one's fear.
Yep. Yeah, no, and that's slaying the monster that I had spoken about. A lot of people are easier to say, hey, it's Dave's fault or Maurice's fault, rather than saying, what role did I play into it? You know, what role did David play into it? And what could I have done differently? What was I feeling? And that's also part of that Clubity piece that I've gone through this year in evaluating all of the thinking that I've done to then go, okay, how can I do things differently and listen better and be a better person? But yeah, so that's that listening and reevaluating. That's why all the R words that I like, the recalibration and things like that. I like to play with that because I do believe that when we ground ourselves, we find the R's in our heart, right? Earth and heart are the same letters as I've mentioned. And do you have a favorite R word?
I have a favorite R. My R is people will pronounce it differently. But recreation, recreation, I think it's recreation and recreation are the same thing. I think when we have recreation, right, we yep. can recreate. So for me, that would be my R word because I think that we are on constant cycles, hopefully, of recreating. If we stayed the same, if everyone was the same, it would be so god awful boring. So, you know, that thought of, you know, and it happens to be spring right now, right? So that thought of spring, that hope springs eternal, right? Spring is coming.
Yep.
So recreation would be my word.
All right, that's an awesome word. Because I'm big on the story of the phoenix and about, again, that rebirth and the recreation. So, you know, and I like that you played along with the recreation and recreation, which is, to say, right, it's the same word, but it's how you look at it. You know, it's not just playing gym games, but it's making time for yourself. Yeah. So how do you make time for yourself?
How do I make time for myself? Not enough, but which I know I have to get better at. But I do make time for myself. I have a dog, and that helps me because I take her for long walks. I also practice yoga, which is very important to me. I do artwork every single day. I sing every day. I dance a little bit every day. I exercise every day. And all of these things are, you know, people are like, oh my gosh, you can't be doing all those things. The thing is, sometimes it's little bits.
Right.
Right. I don't have to run a marathon today, but did I get some exercise in? Maybe I didn't do an hour of yoga, but did I do three poses that brought me a little bit of peace or relaxation? So some days I'm successful, right, at those really feeding me and filling me up. And some days it feels like, all right, I did all those and, you know, I still feel the same way. But it's about getting up the next day and doing it again.
Right. I mean, it's keeping that flow. It's that energy flow and just keep moving, doing what you, and it's doing, not trying. It's that doing part is, again, I love that you do lots of different things. So it's not just that every morning I get up and do yoga. And then if yoga doesn't work, it goes downhill. No, if you want, you dance, which is great. You walk the dog, you engage with the dog, right? Just having a pet is helpful in so many different ways.
Yeah. And especially, you know, now with our lockdown, you know, the isolation. So, cause I've been alone for a year, and that also takes a toll and it's been a challenge. So learning to flourish, right. Given that situation, has been a conscious task.
Yep.
And the conscious task.
That was one of the things how I came up with the Klubity piece is, for me, I didn't like being by myself, and I didn't have a choice during COVID, and I reemerged as somebody who I can actually now be alone by myself and not, I guess alone is by yourself, but I could be by myself and be in peace, which is, it's just a different life and experience that I hadn't ever lived before, which is great.
Well, a beautiful gift out of the challenge, right?
Yeah, I've received our TEDx. You know, the TEDx was one of the gifts. I've received a lot of gifts. I've been blessed. I realized how blessed I was before. I knew that going into it, but coming out, I feel so much more blessed and in flow with the universe's universal energy.
Yeah, beautiful.
So obviously, we've been talking about your peace and love, and I get that part. When have you needed to take a bat? And again, remember, a bat is more like, you know, the non-conflict resolution. Like, you know, it's not about being violent at all. It's more about when you need to take a stand, and how do you create those non-negotiable boundaries that you need for you?
Well, I think that that's happened several times in my life. You know, I will have hit a wall with either what I'm doing, or maybe I had a business and I had challenges in that business relationship. And at a certain point I left that. I've had to make those kinds of decisions. I've had situations in my personal life and my professional life where I've had to say, you know what, it's time for a change and to move on. And I think the stand has been always saying to myself that I have to do something more that means more to me. That I have always in some ways envied people who could stay in a job for so long and hopefully that they loved it, but I couldn't stay at a job. I couldn't stay someplace if it didn't feel that I was doing something with that now, if I wasn't growing. In a sense, that's always been the stand for me is, you know, am I pushing myself enough? Am I growing enough? And if I'm not, you know, then it's really like pushing oneself out, oneself out the door. On another level, I don't know if I would call this being part of the bat, but you know, a large part of my work has been for a couple of decades, but now even more so in racial equity work, and really taking a stand and saying, you know, it's not there are certain, you know, people will go, well, everybody's opinion is okay, and at a certain point you do have to draw a line. To quote James Baldwin, you know, discrimination is okay as long, you know, or we can agree to disagree as long as it doesn't cost me, it doesn't oppress me. And the thing is that there are people who say, well, everybody just has, we have to just agree to disagree. And sometimes in certain cases, certainly when it comes to racial equity, social justice, that is one place where I hold a stand.
Yeah, because you have to be who you are and be comfortable and make sure, because I do know that you have a huge social justice piece of you, and that's one of the things I respect so highly, because that's you put yourself out there, you know, doesn't matter, because that's what that taking a stand. That's that leadership piece.
Well, it's also not. It's not going to change until enough people take a stand.
Right.
Right. Enough people have to take a stand to say, no, this is not right. It's not okay. And that means, and that's uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. Right. It's uncomfortable for all of us. But more uncomfortable for people who are discriminated against. So I always feel like I can deal with discomfort. That's okay.
Right. Let me learn. Let me have that experience to learn through my discomfort and help somebody else. And that's that, you know, we're all together Because I know you do. Now, you also do, you have something, Ramapo for Children, up in Rhinebeck? I love Rhinebeck, that area.
Ramapo. I work with Morningside Center for Teaching Responsibility, Social Responsibility. I work for Ramapo for Children. I've worked for National School Climate Center. I work for Million Peacemakers. You know, all of these are organizations that I've partnered with. Ramapo has a campus up in Rhinebeck. They originally worked with young people who couldn't function in schools and developed social emotional programs for them. But all of these organizations, you know, have very similar kind of tenets to them, you know, that the goal is to really bring as much agency and health, to bring as much social, bring as much equity versus equality, right? Because difference between equity and equality. To bring as much equity to people who have been underserved, disproportionately marginalized and or discriminated against. And so for me, each one of these organizations, although I work with several, each one of these organizations has those through lines, which is really an important thing to me, not only for the world I'm living in, because I'm here for as long as I'm, knock on wood, as long as I'm living here, but I also, you know, I have a 21-year-old daughter, and I've worked with thousands of children, and I've worked in over 350 schools. I think of all of those young people and what will their world be, right? And I would like to see if I can contribute on my humble journey to making it a better place, you know, for their lifetimes.
It's that butterfly effect. You got to move the wings and shift whatever aspects of the universe that you can. And I know you've done it. I looked at all the organizations, and I'm like, I get involved also with my Goons for Good that are part charity, where I'm doing so much. I'm like, all right, I'm involved in a lot of things. And then I looked at your list, and I was like, wow. Like, you're, but it's great. You step up. You do take that bat, you know, to what's important to you, to shift the world, you know, for better. And I thank you for that.
Yeah, well, and one of the organizations I work with, Million Peacemakers, actually, their goal is to create peacemakers around the world, speaking of your goal. You know, so, you know, I think they're one of the beautiful things I've learned is there are more people doing good than we think about. We focus on the people who are destructive, but there are actually more people doing good than there are people being destructive. And we have to, I invite all of us to not only celebrate that, but to look for them and to partner with them, right? To see what we can do.
Right, and that's exactly my idea of Goons for Good, is if I know a guy, again, playing on my Brooklyn accent, but it really is knowing somebody. It doesn't have to be a guy, because I know people, you know, in all genders and identities related to that. But if you know somebody, like if I know somebody, hey, you have to talk to my friend Marisa, and you guys can, you know, think about the what ifs and create the amazing pieces that you have. Mm. Okay. I've probably taken off more of your time, and I thank you. It's such an interesting, what I'd like to ask you is, do you have like a favorite quote that you'd like to share with everybody today?
I do. I will actually, let's see. I thought of this. You had mentioned this to me a while back, and I also heard this on your podcasts. So I had thought about this, but there is a Tupac Shakur has a beautiful quote that I love to share, which is, "You may not always have a comfortable life, and you will not always be able to solve all the world's problems at once. But don't ever underestimate the importance you can have, because history has shown us that courage can be contagious and hope can take on a life of its own."
That is awesome. Thank you so much. And we'll end on that. I can't be any better than that. So everybody, find your peace and love, and don't forget to bring your bat, but make sure it's a sweet spot and just enjoy your lives. Thank you so much.
Thank you, David.
Thank you, Marissa. Well, my friends, today's journey has come to a close. I hope the seeds of peace and love continue to grow for each one of you. Remember the peace and love surround you that will assist you to rise again. And don't forget to bring a bat for what you believe in. Namaste.